I am okay. The sirens are coming, so maybe that's a sign. I'm feeling super nervous. And full disclosure, I said yesterday it was my first time sharing my story. That's a lie. I had shared it in another meeting when someone else asked me to speak, but I've been feeling super nervous, just checking in with myself and being honest with myself. I've been feeling really nervous and excited, grateful that I was asked to speak. And I've been in ACA for about a year. And I'm just asking my HP just to guide this conversation. And part of breaking the cycle is talk, trust, and feel. So that's what I'm just gonna go and learning that whatever is recorded, that it will go to the ears that need to hear it. So, and I see my sponsor and it's super comforting and all of you that are here. Okay, let's do this. So today I'm learning to be my own loving parent. I'm still learning to reach out to my ACA family. I'm learning to have more secure, close relationships. I'm learning to trust in God, the God of my understanding, myself and others, and recognize who safe people are and what a safe person is to me. Because I would hear that, and this is one of the first rooms that I wouldn't walk in, but I logged into, and I was invited by my therapist. And I really believe she's a ACA because the love that I feel every single time I'm here is just so unconditional. I don't think I've ever experienced, I mean, I've experienced that before and it felt really unknown to me. So unconsciously, I would push it away because the people that really loved me just, I was like, why is this person being so nice? Why, what do they want out of me? What I realized here is that it was because usually in my family of origin, some, because they knew what they knew, and I'm not here to beat them up because they've also done the best that they could, and just like I have, this comes from so many generations. And this is where I feel really loved. And what safe people are to me is someone that when I open up my heart and my thoughts, it's not used as a weapon. It's not used in another opportunity to turn it around on me and say, remember when you told me this? And then I didn't realize that that was what that was. Like that was a emotionally unsafe person. And the love that, and for anonymity, I won't release my sponsor's name, but she reminds me, I think God really did send her to me. The first time I saw her in a meeting, I was like, oh my gosh, that looks just like my mom. But it's like my mom in like a very healed version, which is kind of weird. And one time, well, my son knows that I come to ACA and he saw her on the screen and he's like, that looks like Nana. What the heck? And I really like the love that she gives me, the gentleness. When I open up about something and I'm like being really hard on myself that sometimes I don't recognize it, she's like, never ever beat yourself up. I had never heard that before. There's no reason for that. But I came into ACA 10/9 of 2024. A relationship not working got me here and was encouraged by my therapist. After my mom passed away, I knew there was a lot of healing to do. When she left Earth, I felt so lost. And then I realized this was the beginning of a new journey of deeper healing. I think this is the first time I felt so seen and understood. She was the first person. Sorry, I'm getting a call. She was the first person I said something about something in my family dynamic happening with my older brother and opened up about that to take care of myself. I won't share the details. I've realized it does more harm than good when I go into the details of that. I am the youngest of three and have a bonus brother who I've never met yet, but we've talked through Facebook Messenger, so thank God for Facebook Messenger. I was born in Mexico, a place called Tequila, which they literally make the tequila there, and brought to the US when I was about a year and a half years old. It was my mom and her niece who was pregnant with my cousin, and we came to the US and we did cross the border, and I am here legally now, thankfully, still working on my citizenship. To be honest, as I said, I was feeling really nervous knowing this day was coming and feeling grateful at the same time because I get to talk about my journey. I want to focus on what I'm learning in ACA and the miracles this far. This is my plan, but God's plan is the ultimate goal. May HP do what HP needs to do with my share. The past I can't change, and I know that everyone did the best they could, just like I have. And this does not negate the things I've been through, the hurt that others have caused, or the hurts I too have caused on others, whether I meant to or not. I do take accountability and do have some hurtful ways I acted, not proud moments for sure. I did some things that I can't take back and spoke to those so close to me in ways I didn't and don't like sometimes. But I can say today is a true, when I apologize, it's a true amend. Sometimes it's living out the amend and doing it differently next time, and sometimes it's both. What I'm doing now is taking it to my HP, God of my understanding, to reflect on what happened and what was going on before that situation took place. What I was thinking, what I was feeling, what did I do, and what did I want to do? And now adding, how do I want to show up different next time to be who I want to be and live the life I want to live? Even if the external circumstances may be the same, because it's about me living a different life. I heard yesterday in the speaker share, creating, I love that, was like creating a world that I don't need to escape from. I'm gonna tattoo that probably. Also continue to learn to reach out to my ACA family. My sponsor, as I said, she's HP sent. I don't mean to create pressure to you. She's here, but what I came to see is she looks a lot like my mom, as I shared. And I believe my mom would have wanted to, like, she's the version my mom would have wanted to be. She would have liked to show up the and I'm really grateful to be here. And this is, if I'm honest, like that's where my little inner child's like, let's go into hiding and recognizing I'm in a safe place and that I don't need to do that anymore. And also here is where dreams that I felt were dead have come back to life. And that was one of the promises, I believe. I'm still learning, very new, but I had always, as a 10-year-old, there was an officer who came to my school and was like in the DARE program and was talking about drugs and all these things. And I was like, I want to be an officer when I grow up. And then life happened. And then because of my citizenship and so on and so forth, I wasn't able to like pursue it. And then just, yeah, life happened. But in someone's share, someone said, I'm pursuing the dream I always had. And I realized that was my little girl's dream. And I was like, oh, shoot, this is what that is. It's this little girl's dream that she always wanted to do. And thanks to that person that shared their story, I'm actually on the journey of pursuing that. And even though it's felt hard and there's been setbacks, like I'm determined. And I really believe it's like a knowing within that that's what I'm supposed to do. And someone said that's a calling. This is where I first heard about grief being freedom. And I do want to say that that I am continuing to practice learning to be vulnerable and to become emotionally available in a deeper way, and to ask questions, to genuinely care for others in a deep way. And also, grief has taught me to be more intentional, to value people. I always cared about people, but now, as I write this, I realize I value people, their time, their attention, because it's precious and it's something that cannot be paid back in any way. It's time given. And on the flip side, I also value my time. And ACA is where I first heard there's freedom in grief. ACA is the first place that I heard that adult children learn not to talk, trust, or feel. And here's where I'm learning to break that cycle. I am learning to say no in different ways. Sometimes it's just no, not now. I realize there's many ways of saying no. Sometimes it's not responding if I'm not able to, not in the right headspace, and giving myself a long pause, possibly an acronym I've heard is pause, possibly another unseen solution exists. Sometimes it's in the pause, it's in responding with a loving text and saying, hey, I'll respond soon. I'm learning not to abandon myself and not to abandon others. If they say something that feels hurtful, I'm learning to go back and check in and do reflective journaling or voice notes. I'm also giving myself permission to not do something because I just don't want to do it. That's my sponsor reminds me of that. And not to feel guilty. That's something I'm learning. Like before, if I got an invitation to go somewhere, and I'm like, well, maybe I should go because I'm a bad person if I don't go. And that truth is, no, I just don't want to go. And that's okay too. And then on the flip side, others have that right too. And this I got from AI. It's a definition for what an emotional available person looks like. And then I found the emotional unavailability. So it says emotionally availability refers to an individual's capacity to engage in emotional intimacy and form meaningful connections with others. It encompasses the ability to express feelings, empathize with others, and respond to emotional needs and relationships. Emotional availability can be influenced by various factors, including past experiences, mental health, and personal beliefs about relationships. Here are some key aspects. So one is self-awareness. Understanding one's emotions and triggers is crucial for being emotionally available. This self-awareness allows individuals to communicate their needs and feelings effectively. Two, open communication, being able to express thoughts and feelings openly fosters deeper connections. It involves both sharing one's own emotions and being receptive to the emotions of others. Empathy, the ability to understand and share the feelings of another person, is essential for emotional availability. Empathy facilitates trust and strengthens bonds and relationships, and that's what I'm learning here. Vulnerability, emotionally availability often requires a willingness to be vulnerable, which can be challenging for many. Allowing oneself to be seen and accepted can enhance emotional intimacy. Healthy boundaries. While being emotionally available is important, it's also crucial to maintain boundaries. This balance helps protect one's emotional well-being while fostering connection. And it goes on, but then the emotional unavailability. Past trauma, experiences such as abuse, neglect, or significant loss can lead individuals to protect themselves by avoiding emotional closeness. Fear of vulnerability. Some people fear being hurt or rejected, so they create emotional barriers to keep others at a distance. Attachment styles. Those with avoidant attachment styles may struggle with intimacy and prefer to maintain independence or over forming deep connections. Coping mechanisms for some emotionally unavailability serves a coping strategy to manage overwhelming feelings of responsibility. And it goes on. I'm learning to be a better parent to myself, to my son. He has a say and he calls me out when I give him attitude and I give him permission to. He says whenever I'm acting out of my baseline and giving saying something that he took, well, that I said, see, there's my accountability, that I said something that was hurtful. He's like, you need a meeting, mom. I still have 29 minutes, so I opened up to the affirmations. And one of the first ones, it says, it's okay to know who I am. It's okay to trust myself. This is on page 329 from the Red Book. It's okay to say I am an adult child. It's okay to know another way to live. It's okay to say no without feeling guilty. It's okay to give myself a break. It's okay to cry when I watch a movie or hear a song. My feelings are okay, even if I'm still learning how to distinguish them. It's okay to not take care of others when I think. That's still a confusing part, the last part, but it's okay to feel angry. It's okay to have fun and celebrate. It's okay to make mistakes and learn. It's okay not to know everything. It's okay to say I don't know. It's okay to ask someone to show me how to do things. This is the part, I mean, many of these affirmations are awesome. I mean, all of them. But the part of like how I was growing up, I was told to do something, expected to know how to do it, and never been shown. So then that created this part of like shame, like when I don't, it still comes up sometimes. Like if I'm told to do something and they expect me to know it, and I'm like, and before I wouldn't ask questions, I'm like, I'm just gonna figure it out. And if I'm honest, I think I volunteered out of anxiousness once in a meeting to be a timer, and that was a hot mess. and I was like, oh my gosh, and it just showed me like, I can have the best intentions, and it doesn't mean it's going to turn out to be the way I think, but it still turned out to be what it needed to be. Because out of that, what I realized was I need to ask more questions and get more clarity if I don't know how to do something, and that it's okay. And then at the same time, I was validated, even though I wasn't expecting that. People were messaging me privately, and you know who you are. And saying like it's okay, this is not you, even though it felt very much of a Jeanette thing. And I think that there is that wound within when something happens that I didn't have the language for it, but it's the there's something wrong with me, the defectiveness. Like I did something wrong, I did something bad. I recognize where that comes from, and it's from that thing with my older brother. That's what I realized in therapy. So some situations when they happen, that's kind of that is the root of where it comes from. And I was like, what the heck? So that's where the shame comes from for me. And my therapist reminded me it's not about you. The part where it says, my feelings are okay, even if I'm still learning how to distinguish them. I remember being in therapy and I thought I was talking about my feelings, and my therapist said, you're saying a thought, that's not a feeling. Like, but that's how I'm feeling. And she's like, no, what are you feeling? I'm like, I don't know. And I'm still learning. I recognize that anger. Recognizing I am part of another 12 step too. I've been in Al-Anon for about 6 years, but this is exactly where I was still doing certain things and acting in behaviors in relationships, especially romantically, in ways that I didn't want to act, like super controlling, very jealous. And I was like, this is not who I want to be. And I think that was my fake self. Like, and I recognized that it was learned, because that's how what I watched. Again, my family and those closest to me have done the best they could. And that's, there's certain beliefs that I'm still breaking free from. Love is not control. I used to think that if someone was trying to control me, it was love. Like, oh, someone's asking me where I am, like, what am I doing? I'm like, oh, they really love me, you know? And it's like, no, this is control, you know? And being a survivor of domestic violence, also recognizing the ways that I acted in that relationship too. I put myself in dangerous situations and acted in ways, and I participated in the escalation. And those are parts that I have to forgive myself for as well. But I hear when I know better, I do better, and I'm not going to beat myself up. And he also did the best he could. And recognizing that in ACA, I was like, oh my gosh, my mom was an adult child too. What the heck? Like, I didn't put those things together. And I'm learning to take care of myself and be that loving parent. And that I'm on my own journey, and that I'm a lifer of ACA, and I'll be forever in here. And this is where I need to be. Again, I'm like such a rookie. I'm a year here, but I'm also looking forward to see what HP has in store for me. And I think what I'm seeing, the miracles, is the relationships that I'm developing, the relationship with myself. Speaking up at work, standing up for myself, and doing it with grace also. And that the other person's not bad, it's just their own journey. And that really helps me, because for a long time, it was a way of protecting myself to not look at myself. Like, by blaming someone else, it's easier because I can see their faults more clearly. But then asking myself, well, what is going on with me, or how did I participate, even if it was just 1%? And sometimes it's 0%, but I could still work with, like, well, what's coming up for me? Where does that come from? Or why do I feel like I need to defend myself? A therapist said, when you have the urge to defend yourself is when you need not to. Yeah, I don't know. I think I just want to leave it there. And I just want to share the time, and I look forward to hearing what you guys have to say, and I'll keep coming back. Love you all.